Welcome into the expansive world of cis society, a space where taboos dissolve, shadows become allies, and sensuality, intimacy, and sexuality are celebrated as gateways to truth. This is Taboo Talks, a podcast where no topic is off limits, and everything is held with courage, compassion, and curiosity. Together, let's shatter the limits of what we've been taught to fear and transform it into the power to live fully, freely, and authentically. Welcome back, everyone, to this episode of Taboo Talks. I'm really intrigued and excited for this fascinating topic that we're going to explore today, which is all about ketamine-assisted therapy for couples and how this psychedelic, this medicine, this drug, depending on how you view it, can be used clinically to actually really support the thriving of the relationships, of relationship ecology. And we're going to be talking with Dr. Courtney Podgen, PhD, LMFT. She is a psychedelic-informed sex and trauma therapist with an eclectic, non-judgment approach. She dives deep into what matters most: your pleasure, your past, and your path forward. And I'm sure that there's going to be just so much insight and gold that comes up. If you've ever done ketamine before, or if you've just been really curious about it, please tune in for this conversation to receive some new ideas, some maybe epiphanies of how these medicines can be really supportive, and also what we need to keep in mind to make sure that we're safe. So welcome on to our show, Courtney.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah, I was so excited connecting with you through ASEC. This is this huge sexual health conference that we're all going to be at in Vegas together in a couple weeks. Yeah. And when I saw that you specifically work with ketamine and couples, this is an area that's really near and dear to my heart with my personal journey. And yeah, I just would love to hear more about what got you into this line of work and what it's like doing this job. And we'll just start there because I think that there's a lot we can really break down around ketamine for people that have a lot of stigma around it or, you know, questions around it.
Yeah. Well, I initially just had an interest in sex therapy from the beginning of my schooling journeys way back in 2005 when I graduated high school. I just knew this was the direction that I wanted to go. And that, you know, when we think of like sex therapy and all it includes, we think of like this funnel, right? And then when you funnel it down to like your specific interests, what I landed in was couples and specifically working with the BDSM and kink community. And also those in polycules or within the swingers community. I worked with that population for well over a decade before. It's not that it got necessarily stagnant, but it was like I needed another tool to add to my belt. Something different, you know, and I knew it wasn't necessarily like a sort of run-of-the-mill therapeutic approach, and I stumbled on ketamine. And when I, you know, did some more research and was like, wow, this is really impactful, and I didn't read anywhere specifically that it was applicable to couples. It was just kind of something that I was like, well, let's try this. And my first ever ketamine journey that I facilitated was with a couple, and it was beautiful. And, you know, it's just something that I continued to do from there.
Yeah, this is so beautiful. Just from my own experience using this medicine in my relationship, it really helps to dissolve the walls and the barriers and the boundaries between not just in the physical, like where your bodies kind of melt together, but in the energetic boundaries we wear, in the verbal boundaries of like, oh, I shouldn't say that. It just for me, in my experience, like the medicine really helps to free the expression and to not be so attached to how it lands and also not be so attached to how it's received. So it's opened up a lot of vulnerable spaces of sharing and allowed us to not come in with our egos and our wounds, but to really come in from this place of like openness, curiosity, and ability to actually receive what the other is saying. And of course, the integration period is so necessary, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But yeah, it's just been such a beautiful, beautiful medicine. And for people listening who might have speculations and questions around ketamine, they're like, oh, isn't that a horse tranquilizer? You know, would you be able to share some of the scientific evidence-based research about the benefits of ketamine therapy and what it helps us with?
Hey, Hot Stuff. We're going to take a quick pause from the show just because I'm so excited to tell you guys about one of the most transformative online tools that I've used that has really unlocked my pleasure journey to the next level. And that is the OMGS course. So until this last year, I actually struggled to orgasm on my own without the help of a toy. I felt dependent, I felt hopeless, and I honestly felt like there was something wrong with me. But within just 2 weeks of starting this course, I had my first orgasm from my own touch. And I was like, hallelujah, I'm not broken. And it's just opened up so much since then. I can honestly say it's just gotten better and wetter from there. So OMGS course is a fun, user-friendly course packed with all sorts of different videos and techniques and showcases a myriad of different women. And it will completely shift the way that you experience pleasure. So, whether you're struggling with orgasms or maybe you just want to amplify your pleasure, both solo and with a partner, this course is truly a game changer. You can use the link in our show notes below to unlock your orgiastic potential and also to support the expansion of the cis society movement. Now, back to your show.
Yeah. So, going back to the sort of common reference of being a horse tranquilizer, ketamine is an anesthetic. That's what its primary use is for in very large doses. So if you were to have like a significant surgery, you might be given ketamine or an alternative anesthetic. But what ultimately happened was, ketamine was discovered to have these antidepressant after effects that came very naturally. And so then it was something where people just continued to make this, it was consistent. It was very consistent. Whereas, like, this antidepressant after effect of ketamine. And, so sometimes we joke in the field that like ketamine is like an antidepressant on steroids because it can have very rapid effects when compared to your traditional SSRI. It just interacts with the brain differently than an SSRI does, where it can take effect like within hours or it can take, a week, but typically it is exponentially quicker. It's not a panacea. It's not your magic bullet. It's just part of your treatment. And it definitely can help, speaking to what you had said about, couples work. And it can help discuss conversations where we can go into it like pre-ketamine and just be like, oh my God, that's terrifying. Like, if I say that, I just might die. And then post-ketamine, we can kind of let our guards and our walls down differently. And, it'd be something where we can approach this topic with more grace and more openness and receptivity. But yeah, when we describe, ketamine and the impact that it has, like neurologically, we discuss like how a tree branch has like little buds that grow on it, right? And ketamine is something that helps the buds grow. Whereas if we are continuously exposed to like depression, anxiety, PTSD, that's something that the buds will fall off. But with ketamine, it can help them to grow back so that there are more chances For their, so we've heard of the neuroplasticity, right? Where our brains like grow and evolve to like think differently to things that we perceived as like, say, maybe scary or terrifying, but then have that similar experience post-ketamine and be like, okay, like, and to think differently about a same experience we've had in the past. So, but those buds growing back is what helps make those new neural connections. Yeah, it's very fascinating. A lot of science and a lot of things that sometimes I'll be like, it's a lot of voodoo science that like it's almost some of a lot of it's explainable and a lot of it is not. But it is very well researched and it does support the effectiveness in a lot of populations. So it's fun to work with and to just see the after effect and just the positive nature that people experience. So, yeah.
So beautiful. It really is just such a revolutionary medicine. And as you were sharing, this is taboo talk, so we also go into the shadow element. And after living 2 summers in Europe, I mean, ketamine is used so regularly there in like the club and like the nightlife scene. And oftentimes I heard people speaking of like ketamine addiction and using it like every day on the daily. And I'm just wondering, like, at what point is it too much? And like, do you only suggest doing this in a clinical setting? And like, what are your thoughts on that? Because ketamine is freaking everywhere right now.
I went to Burning Man in 2023, and it definitely was like the sort of hot thing there. And I was just like, oh, well, I'm a ketamine therapist. Like, if you need a trip sitter, I'm your person. But like, no, thank you. Yeah, so when it comes to like ketamine and like recreational settings, I definitely have the bias of like, don't do that. And the only reason I really have the bias of don't do that is because you really taint the ability for it to work for you in a therapeutic sense if that is something that you do want to try somewhere down the line. I remember when I was being trained in ketamine-assisted psychotherapy, asking if someone is using ketamine recreationally, would you take them on as a patient for ketamine-assisted psychotherapy? And the answer was no. But I think that there are a lot of other things to be considered, because I do know that one of the things that it is a sort of potential, not necessarily an intention of doing ketamine-assisted psychotherapy, is you just let go of your vices. You know, it's common to stop drinking, stop smoking, after having done ketamine without rhyme or reason. It just happens. And after my ketamine journey, I just had an absolute disinterest in drinking. I haven't drank since June 30th, 2023, but like I wasn't an alcoholic. It wasn't anything I had an issue with. It was just something I was no longer interested in. So, but as far as like, you know, the addictive factor, some physicians say that it doesn't, ketamine in therapeutic doses does not target your, like, the addictive center of your brain. That's not my area of expertise, so I wouldn't say I can confidently confirm that. But the one thing that I do know about ketamine-assisted psychotherapy is it's not something that we are doing like for years on end. It's not like, you know, when you meet with a psychotherapist or a therapist or any kind of a therapist and you might have like weekly or bi-weekly meetings, that's not how ketamine therapy works. Research supports that for the highest, like best outcome for ketamine-assisted psychotherapy is to do 6 dosing sessions. There are some folks who say that you should do those 6 sessions like concurrently, like week after week after week for 6 weeks. I do it as like more of like an intuitive. You do your journeys as you see fit, as needed. So I think it depends on the practitioner, but because ketamine, well, how ketamine-assisted psychotherapy is different than using ketamine recreationally is it's in a higher therapeutic dose. It's not like, you get it from, whoever you would get it when using recreational and you would bring it to therapy. It's a very involved process. I am not a prescriber. I don't have a medical degree, but I do work in conjunction with prescribers who do give a very thorough medical evaluation to determine if my client is even a good medical fit for ketamine. So they'll look for like certain ketamine or certain medical conditions that might rule them out, and to see if like if you have a certain medical condition, like how well is it managed? And even for on my end, it taking into consideration certain mental health conditions. For example, it's not advised that you would give someone, say, with like schizophrenia, ketamine, or someone even with borderline personality disorder, potentially, because that can exacerbate their symptoms that they're already experiencing and make it worse than better. And then, once the medical evaluation is done and like my evaluation is done so that you're deemed to be both medically and mentally, emotionally a good candidate for ketamine-assisted psychotherapy, from there, I do a lot of intention setting. And as much as possible, if possible, I also like to curate the afterward experience before the actual like integration session with me has happened. So as far as intention setting goes, basically I'm asking like, who do you want to be on the other side of this journey? And but also keeping in mind that the medicine will take you where you need to go, not necessarily where you want to go. And I definitely don't sugarcoat it, because folks will ask like, well, what if I have a bad trip? And you might have a bad trip. And in that, even there's the possibility of like, is something maybe, good or therapeutic coming out of that? I can't say. Every journey is unique. We prepare as much as we can and eventually just have to go with the direction of where the medicine takes you. And then afterwards, once the journey is said and done, like when you are in the journey, you are, for lack of better words, you're relatively incapacitated. I am taking care of you. I am watching to make sure that your breathing is stable. We set the scene where they talk about like set and setting, and making sure that like the setting is a very feel good place and maybe has like a good ambiance to it. If you want to make your own altar, have some incense, some candles. I always play music that typically does not have lyrics. When we talk about, sort of like neural associations, I don't want you to hear a song, a lyric, and then go back to a, oh, this time in my life when, and that not be a positive experience. Because it's supposed to be a very introspective experience. And then coming out of that, having a debrief. Sometimes you're not going to have much of a debrief depending on how much like happened. Sometimes like words just don't come to mind. But if I'm able to curate, because I live in Minneapolis and there's a lot here as far as like nature and like other things that you can engage in that can be really good for the mind and body. Sometimes I'll recommend my clients to go to like a yin yoga class or kundalini or to a sound bath, making sure that they're touching base with nature and avoiding things that would be construed as or are explicitly a depressant. So if it's just like, don't smoke pot, don't drink alcohol, try to avoid having engagements with people that you know are very negative, because during that like window of like the journey to like 10 days after, that's when your brain is like ripe with neuroplasticity. That's when we're building these new neural connections. So that is the perfect time to where it's like, I want to be more in tune to like what I put into my body or how I care for my body. That is the perfect time to, maybe try a new fitness class or to try to drink like half a gallon of water a day, or like, try these new habits that you want to forever instill, and hoping that that'll help cement it, as you continue to like nurture these new neural developments. So I guess that's in a the short and skinny, long but short answer of the beginning, middle, and end of the ketamine journey.
Thank you. Thank you. That was really in depth, and I really feel your care with this. Like you just setting the intent from setting the intention to making sure that like aftercare is nurtured. It sounds like such a beautiful ceremony, really, from beginning to end. And I'm curious how does this look for a couple? Like are they both receiving the medicine at the same time? Like, are they having a conversation right after? Like, what does that whole kind of dance look like?
Yeah, so with couples, it's a little bit different. It's like same but different. Typically, when I'm working with a couple and they decide we want to do a joint ketamine session, when it comes to intention setting, I will have an individual meeting with them, with each member of the couple, to get their individual intentions, and then I will meet with them together to get their shared intentions. And then typically what I do is, sometimes it can be difficult to answer the question, who do I want to be on the other side? And so oftentimes clients will answer the question as, who do I not want to be on the other side? So I take note of that, and then I'll write it in the positive, and I write it like I will literally write the intentions down on a sheet of paper in the present as it is something that they already possess, as if it's something that is already, a character trait of theirs. So once we go into the ketamine journey, my couples will be together in the same room, and we'll review these intentions together, the individual ones as well as the separate ones. And then once we start the journey, they have the mindfold on. So it's just this fancy sort of blindfold that has like peepholes, so you can open your eyes but still see darkness. I appreciate it because when I did my ketamine journey, I had just gotten my lashes done. So perks to the mindfold. But even with couples, it's a very introspective journey because they have their own set of, like, even though they're listening to the same music playlist, they have their own individual headphones. So they can't, like, if one another were talking, like, they wouldn't hear one another. And so they would have to, like, take their, like, earphone off. Just for safety purposes, they're like in the same room because there's only one me, but they're typically not in like the same like chair or something in case someone were to like flail an arm or something. We're not hitting other people. So separate chairs, and well, not, I should say separately reclined chairs. Because we want to be very comfortable but still upright enough so I can see that you're breathing. And so then We'll go through the ketamine journey. And after that ketamine journey, that's when there's more of a couples aspect that comes to life. Because that's when we can have a conversation of like, did any of your shared intentions, show up in your journey? Like, what sort of things came up for you that is either, relevant to this relationship, outside of this relationship, or is something that is like related to like work, but is contributing to like how someone in this relationship shows up. And, oftentimes when I'm working with couples, we'll have intentions of wanting to be more open, more intimate, more connected, and less fearful of like being vulnerable. And that can really, really be nurtured after the ketamine session. Sometimes having couples that want to like hop in the same recliner together and just snuggle for like 20 minutes following their ketamine journey, and that being like, then I just feel like, oh my God. Even though I'm facilitating this journey, I'm like, oh, I'm intruding. But it's really beautiful to like witness that connection. So that's just one of the ways that you can do, ketamine therapy. I think with each practitioner, it's different in how they would approach couples work. But that's just kind of my style. And same thing with the couples as I would with individual therapy, as far as trying to like curate the after effect of making sure like you get out in nature, or like trying to engage in some of the habits that you are trying to integrate into this relationship and into, who you want to be or how you want to show up.
Yeah, I have a question for you about the actual journey. Do you feel that it is some disservice if the couple is like physically connected during the journey? I mean, you mentioned that they could hurt each other if they fling an arm, but have you heard of other practitioners letting the couples actually kind of merge like energetic physical fields during the journey and how that also turns out?
Well, and I think it's also dependent on the couple. Because if the couple is bringing in like some heavy sort of emotional baggage or stuff from like previous relationships or past trauma, that might be an instance where I would not want to have the couple necessarily connected, because I don't know what's gonna come up. Now, if it's something where it's like, nope, everything's like kosher here, like no issues, there still is the, possibility, the risk of something coming up. But I also like to put it up to the comfort of the client. 'Cause in the grand scheme of things, they know themselves better than I will ever know them. I am just a blip in their life. And I remember one place that I used to work. Like, it was really standard to just have like the practitioners in into the medicine journeys, but then, it being I guess challenged, what would it be more beneficial to have other people in the room if it's something that made the client feel more comfortable, more safe, and it being easier for them to let go? So I think it's a case by case basis. And that's kind of the beauty of therapy, is there's no sort of right or wrong way to go about it. A lot of it is trial and error. And because ketamine therapy, at least in, Minnesota, is still relatively new, we all have our, I think, our ways of doing things and our quirks. And, some folks have, their ketamine practice where it's more like spa based, and, there's like an ambiance to the room, and And then there are other folks where it is very clinical. And then there are other folks where, we do the ketamine journeys like in the client's home. And then there are other folks that do it virtually and then have like a trip sitter who like the therapist has like the telephone contact to for like any emergencies
That's
arising.
wild. I heard of this and I forgot about it until you just mentioned it. But I actually think I recently met a woman who did ketamine-assisted therapies through Zoom.
I almost did that job. I was in training for a job like that.
Were you the woman I was talking to?
I learned all about the procedures of doing that. For somebody that has never done ketamine and maybe is interested, but they're nervous and they're like, what's going to happen to me and my body and my mind? Can you just explain some of the side effects and what goes on physically?
It is a case by case thing. It like how your body will respond. I think there are a few factors that, what sort of mindset are you in like before the ketamine journey? Like what's your previous experience with psychedelics? I've heard a lot of folks having like out of body experiences. I definitely had an out of body experience. I remember it the sort of beginning of my ketamine journey having this like moment where it literally felt like I was at the top of a roller coaster and we were going down. And I literally was like, oh my God, I can feel my belly in my throat right now. Obviously, I couldn't because I was like laying down in a recliner. But then, that's when my sort of, well, not illusions, hallucinations, my visuals started coming. And then, with my visual journey, like I remember I was in, what are those things called that go up mountains? Gondolas. It was like I was in a gondola, but instead of going up a mountain, I was going across this like, just film strip. And it was, and I was like, wow. And a lot of folks will say, like, it's like being in the Matrix. There's a lot of neon green visuals. And being like having an out of body experience where you see yourself, but it's like you're outside of yourself. That's a very common experience that you hear with ketamine. Another common experience is like becoming one with the earth. I remember in my journey, like I was a sidewalk and I got walked all over, but it was as if I was like a glass sidewalk. I could just see everybody in the world above me, and I was like, wow. And then I think with my second ketamine journey, because my ketamine dose was higher, it was a lot darker. And I remember not having much of any color in that ketamine journey, but seeing various shades of black and gray. But, the experiences were similar and different in a sense that, like, at times I thought that I was talking, but I definitely wasn't. I just had this like really big grin plastered across my face, and like I was in it and enjoying myself, obviously. But I thought I was conveying that to others in the room when nothing was coming out of my mouth. Just the experience typically of thinking that you may be talking or moving, but you're not talking or moving, but also having, visuals. And, sometimes when I'll, play the music that doesn't have any words, I'll have clients come back and say, like, are you sure that didn't have words in it? 'Cause I definitely heard words. I'm like, nope, it definitely didn't. But, and then one of the things that I'll also do after the ketamine journey is I will send the clients their playlist. So they can listen to it again, And try to tap back into some of the things that came to them during their journey. And then sometimes, the following session when I meet with them, they'll be like, I heard that song and it definitely didn't have lyrics, but this is what I heard. Yeah, so
So
it's
interesting. It really
very.
is. And every experience is so different from person to person because the medicine doesn't give you what you want, it gives you what you need. You know, we always say
Yes.
that. And for me, I mean, how it's interesting because I met ketamine before I met ketamine. You know, I had a lot of friends that were partaking in it and transforming their lives. Like one friend in particular who I just like, I'd known her for a while and I saw her and I was just like, something's different about you. Like, what is it? And she wouldn't tell me for days. And then
Yeah.
finally she was like, it was ketamine. Then I was like, holy shit. Like, I just really like her energetic body, the way that she was interacting with the world had completely
Yes.
transformed. So yeah. And then the first time I heard ketamine, the ketamine experience described, someone was like, imagine like everything slows down and there's like a vacuum cleaner that goes into all of the crevices of your brain and like clean it.
Oh.
And I was like, I feel really interested about this because at that point, I'd only done psychedelics that were like speeding up the state of my consciousness, like mushrooms, ayahuasca, you know, DMT. And DMT specifically was like, I'm receiving a million bits of information every second. So I felt really curious and open to sitting with ketamine based on what I'd heard about it. And it was so different and also just so incredibly beautiful. And it was a slowing down for me in my experience. Like whatever song I was listening to, it became like fractal by fractal. It didn't sound like a song. It sounded like an om, like almost like a breath. And there weren't any thoughts there. There was a lot of like warmth and love and a lot of nothingness. And when I came out of it, I was singing. Like as I sat up from the experience, I started singing. And I was so fucking happy to be alive. I was just like, wow, like I can't believe how angry I've been as a human. Like I am here, I am back, you know? And it was just this immediate turnaround. And yeah, I haven't sat with it since, but like through this conversation, I'm feeling again, this curiosity to deepen my work with it. And I started doing research on the length, the amount of time, the amount of medicine you sit with. And like you said, like 6 to 8 sessions in like a certain period of time is pretty standard. And so, yeah, I'm gonna see what comes into my field around it, but it really is like it's a profound experience. Like that much I can share. Like your experience will be different than my experience, then that will be different than Courtney's, than Elfina's, but like it if there's a ping of something in this conversation, like I'm speaking to the listeners and like maybe your heart's beating a little faster and you feel a curiosity, like it is a beautiful and profound experience, and specifically when you do it in a clinical setting with somebody holding space for you.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I feel like it's so interesting hearing both of you ladies sharing your experience, and every experience is totally unique as well, depending on who you're with, where you're doing it. Like, there's so much that it's done recreationally where people are snorting the powder, and that experience is so vastly, drastically different than doing like a lozenge or like getting it at the IV like put into you and actually having 200 milligrams or more, like the therapeutic dose, where you just completely blast off. It's like, I think it's one of the most galactic. I feel like it's so galactic when I do it. I feel super connected to cosmic consciousness, and like I'm really able to download from source and download from my highest self. And I always just feel so much spaciousness, like open up in my mind where all the thoughts and chatter live and the stories. And it just clears that. And this is this direct line of consciousness, like streams down. And I always receive a lot of messages of just truth, and it feels really cleansing and nourishing. And like, I like that it slows me down. I like that I don't really move. I like that it feels like I'm melting almost. And when you do it with other people, you like melt into oneness. If you do it with more than one person, it's kind of really interesting. You literally kind of lose the sense of boundaries and separateness, and you actually can merge into a conscious, like a unified field of consciousness, where it doesn't really matter whose foot is that, whose leg is that. Like, you just become like one organism, which at an energetic level, we are one. So I think that this medicine has also really helped me understand that beyond the physical form, we are also connected, and to feel more comfortable in that connection. But I want to talk about, like, specifically with couples, since you work with couples, what are some of the transformations, like maybe one or two transformation stories before and after of couples that came in with a certain problem or came in with a certain energy? And then on the other side, how did the ketamine transform, uplift their relationship?
That was the exact question I was going to ask. Thank you for asking.
I think the most common one would have to do with just that openness of to be vulnerable. Because it's really common. I suppose, like, it's just an interesting and weird common phenomena how, like, sometimes we can struggle to be completely vulnerable with our partners, but then we can tell, like, the same thing to a complete stranger on the metro. And part of that is because we don't have anything to lose by sharing, that vulnerability. So that's, I think, one of the most common things is this willingness to share and it feeling like just an overwhelming burden of like, oh my God, like this wall that is up so high, and it just going down. Even if it's just a little lower, it just makes it easier to preface a conversation with, I'm really scared to tell you this right now, versus pre-ketamine might be like, we are not even going to have this conversation. I'm just gonna think it in my brain and I'm gonna ruminate and it's just not happening. So that would be the most common one. And then the second is related to like this merging of interest discrepancies, where when we can like embrace others' differences in like interests, whether that be like sexually or even just like general interests, and for that not to be like perceived so much as a threat, but just like, oh well, that's my partner, they like whatever thing that like consumes a lot of their time, Dungeons and Dragons, for example, and it's just like I just can't get on board, and I see that as a threat because they're spending so much time versus like perceiving it as something like this is okay. I don't have to see this as a threat, and that it's something that, going back to, we can talk about it. Because it's not as scary for me to share that this is a vulnerability of mine, that I feel like I'm losing you to a video game.
Yeah, like specifically, can you go a little further? Because you do sex coaching too. So, there can be hard things to share on sexual desires, fantasies, maybe the sexual shame, sexual trauma, right? So, like, how are you specifically able to help couples coach them with the ketamine around this realm of sexuality?
So, when it comes to like sexual shame, oftentimes I'm working with religious trauma. And what has been internalized from a much earlier time in life that predates this relationship. Again, going to the medicine is going to take you where you need to go, not necessarily where you want to. Oftentimes, that's not even identified as something that is a core area needing to be addressed. So then it comes into play, like in the integration. So we'll like discuss whatever intention that it was, and then it was like, and this. So the religious trauma, that being something that comes up, and going back to me saying, like, I primarily work with the BDSM and kink community, polycules, and swingers. That's where religious trauma really can drive the shame, is being a part of these communities. And that's where ketamine can really help to undo those neural connections between the way the church is the way to be, and this is the way that I am, and associated shame and breaking those neural connections, but creating new ones in that, this is my sexual identity. This is how I present. And that being not a source of shame, but something that is okay, because there's nothing inherently wrong with being kinky or a swinger
that
or whatever. So, not a source of shame, but because
Wow, this
there's
feels
nothing
so
inherently wrong.
relatable. I like have such deep religious programming from my whole life, like Christian school, Christian life, in like a, an open dynamic right now, and I've just been dealing with so many layers of shame and like trying to separate what's real, what's conditioning, what's safe, what's trauma, and I'm just hearing that this could be a really powerful tool to really rewire the brain, but that in order to really get the maximum juice out of that, it's really about what I'm hearing, if correct me if I'm wrong, is that it's actually about more about after the journey than even during the journey. And so like let's just say your intention is to release religious conditioning and trauma, right? Then like what could you do to really maximize the next 10 days after? What types of activities, what types of tools could you engage in?
That's where, like, I might introduce some things such as being able to identify cognitive distortions and how they appear in your life, such as black and white thinking. Because if we're able to identify our black and white thinking, then we're much quicker to provide the evidence of, like, well, that's not true because, and thinking of the exceptions. That might be an example of, like, one thing where, if, like, this sort of thought of, like, but the church says this and I should be shameful because, but then thinking of, like, well, remember this one experience that we had in El Salvador, and we were at this, like, swingers resort, and it was just a phenomenal, like, experience. Can't be shame that, and just making those positive correlations with, like, this thing that, like, maybe the church says is bad, but I've been feeling it is really good, and I'm not hurting anybody, nor am I hurting myself. This is a key experience, it's a massive amount of pleasure. And then I also might have engage in, like, reading books or listening to podcasts that are sex positive related to just really encouraging lack of shame in the communities that they're engaged in. So it's something where they're not just getting the messages from themselves, but they're also getting it from other community members that may be at a distance, but can definitely echo what it is that we're trying to, like, hone in this message of, like, you're okay. You're okay. You're not a bad person. You're not doing bad things. Essentially shedding that identity of, growing up with a very church foundation. So, yeah, that would be, like, some of the things that I would recommend. I love giving homework and, like, recommending books and podcasts. Therapy with me is much like school, and I will refer to it as such because I'm like, this is like the school of life. But again, I'm just a blip in your life. So I, like, give people everything that I possibly can in the blip that I get.
Important blip. Yeah, this is so helpful. Thank you for sharing all of this. I'm like, I want to hire you. Hire you to a journey.
Are you in Minnesota?
No, but we could do it virtually. I'm in Hawaii.
Oh, I would have to get licensed in Hawaii, or you would have to come to Minnesota.
Oh, yeah.
That damn
lot.
licensure. It just gets in the way of
Macaronis.
everything.
I
I know.
mean, Heather, do you have something you want to say before I wrap us?
Yeah, I was breaking break. You were breaking in and out. I was moving through some Wi-Fi issues, but I caught the gist of what you were saying, and it just sounds like Courtney, like from your time experience and professional work with ketamine, that it doesn't matter like what people come in with. It's more about like what they like the after experience and what that opens up in them, and that like everyone comes in with stories, walls, should, shouldn'ts, like maybe some victimization, but like generally after a ketamine experience, like those are softened, and like any issue is just it's easier to digest and to work with. It's like more malleable, right? Like before it was this like rock, and then it kind of becomes this clay that you can mold. And I just really love that. I love what you're doing, and I really appreciate your work and your heart that you put into it. So just a personal thank you before Alfina wraps everything up.
Yeah, just to reverberate off of that too, from my own experience, like it's really easy to share in that space, to be open, to be vulnerable, to listen and to receive, and also just being really aware that sometimes when we receive so much in that space of openness, then when we are off the medicine, it can be another journey of integrating, oh, okay, now I actually have to like really feel everything that I've received from my partner. So just being compassionate with yourself and yeah, just understanding that even if it feels like easy in the moment, that there might be moments or days or even weeks after where there's further processing or further integration that comes up. And that's also really, I feel like it's a really normal part of the process to be expected. But the ketamine really does like allow that to even, it juices it out, right? It like juices it out of the carrot or the celery, and it allows us to actually drink it and receive the nutrients.
Yeah, that's a great way of putting it. And that's also one thing that I remind folks when they do their journey that, like, it's not like you're gonna come out of this journey with golden nuggets. Sometimes your golden nugget is going to come 3 days after the journey, and you're gonna be like, oh my God, I remember like when I was like in the midst of this journey, I had this thought. Or it's just an observed behavior change. That's like, oh, I'm interacting differently with this particular person who used to be like a vampire energy sucker. And I'm not giving them as much time. So you're absolutely right.
Yeah, thank you for this work. I have one last question for you. You're saying like the 10 days after are when our brain is most primed for the neuroplasticity. And would you recommend during that 10 days, like to continue to avoid depressants like weed and alcohol and all of that to get the most benefits?
Yeah,
And
there
anything else to
actually.
avoid or anything else to add in during that time to really optimize?
Yeah, so just going back to like, I mean, I think in an ideal world, if you could avoid a shitty work environment, that would be excellent, or a shitty boss, of course, but we can't do that. So, it's not always possible, at least. So making the most of the time that you do have away from that, like away from that job, away from that space, or if it is avoiding a particular person, if, it's having a bad relationship with a parent, like, maybe not taking their call for, 10 days or 15 days, or recognizing like, I just need to have better boundaries with this person, or I want to have better boundaries with this person. It might be, my gym is a toxic environment and I need to change where I work out. It can be any variety of things. It's case by case, dependent. And I think it's something where if we're able to identify in advance, what's dragging you down? What areas of your life are contributing to like depression or anxiety, or it causing you to have like the most triggers? And is that something that realistically can be avoided? And if so, how? If not, how can we manage it? So that we can feel in a better space mentally.
That makes a lot of sense. Like, if you're scrolling on social media and that's causing you a lot of anxiety, maybe you give up social media scrolling for 10 days after, for instance. Or you're just staring, you're staring at a screen and you're not getting enough nature, and then you make sure to get in nature every day. Yeah, cool. Well, thank you for all the gems. Thank you for all the wisdom and all the training and expertise you carry in this field, for destigmatizing this and sharing this medicine with the world. And especially couples work. It's just, I'm a sex, love, and relationship coach, so I'm just all about couples work and empowering couples to really be able to move through those more challenging situations, because there's so much power and beauty in unions. And so thank you for doing that work and cultivating that, co-cultivating that love, truly that love for our planet. And I want to give you just like a couple minutes as we wrap to share how our listeners can connect with you, how could they can potentially book an appointment with you if they're in Minnesota, and then maybe any other offerings you want to share.
Well, I'll be at the ASECT conference if anyone wants to connect there in Las Vegas. Otherwise, as far as if anyone wanted to follow me on social media, my handle is Dr. Courtney Says. I don't share a lot when it comes to sex therapy on there because my primary thing is I'm a human first and I'm a therapist second. And that's really important that as a therapist, people see that we actually have lives and you don't have to put us on this pedestal of power just because we sometimes tell you what to do in an hour of time we have with you. But it's Dr. Courtney Says, because I jokingly say what I say goes. And then as far as, oh, I forgot the other one. If you wanted to set up an appointment with me, either if you live in the state of Minnesota or the state of Wisconsin, those are the two states that I'm licensed in. I have my own private practice called Center for Sexual Wellness. And center is spelt the British way, not the American way. So it's CENTRE. I always like to let folks know I do not work with insurance. And there's a big reason for that. Insurance will not reimburse for sexual issues. I'm not a medical provider. They will provide medical providers with reimbursement, but oftentimes the sexual diagnoses needs to be linked to a depression or anxiety. And I find, if diagnoses don't fit a whole criteria, I don't want to unnecessarily diagnose someone with something just for reimbursement. I see it as something as very unethical. But otherwise, I am available. I do online sessions only, unless we're doing a ketamine journey. Those are always in person. Unless you opt to do the virtual, I do offer virtual ketamine sessions. In that situation, then it's just very curated and there are a lot of protocols around it, and we can cross that bridge when we get to it, should you choose that journey. So,
And we'll link all these in the show notes as well of how to connect with
beautiful.
her. Yeah, that's crazy about the insurance thing. It's like, what, our sexuality is like the root of everything. That should be the most prioritized insurance coverage to me. That's crazy. But anyway, yeah, thank you for explaining that. Thank you for coming on our show. Thank you, everyone, for listening, for being here with us. If this episode really impacted you, like it did me, please share it with your friends, share it with your family, maybe your parents who have weird stigma around this still. And yeah, spread the word, because yeah, this is so important that we are liberating the truth for the planet. Thanks, Courtney.
Thank you for tuning into Taboo Talks, where some truths need to be spoken and some silences need to be broken. Each week, we come together with diverse minds to explore and integrate the dance between shadow and light. Join our community and stay connected to all of the exciting movements of our mission through our website at cissociety.world, where you can sign up for our email list. This is the best way to stay updated on new taboo topics, episodes of our podcast,
and even find live events near you. On our website, you'll also find links to follow our podcast, Taboo Talks, on platforms like Spotify, YouTube, and Apple. For those who want to dive even deeper, you can join our private WhatsApp community to engage in meaningful discussions about taboo topics with members from all over the world. So don't miss a moment. Visit cissociety.world and share these conversations to support the expansion of our mission. Together, we can spark the change the world needs. Until next time, stay curious, stay open, and remember, the only thing taboo is not talking about it. Thank you for tuning into Taboo Talks, where some truths need to be spoken and some silences need to be broken. Each week, we come together with diverse minds to explore and integrate the dance between shadow and light. Join our community and stay connected to all of the exciting movements of our mission through our website at cissociety.world, where you can sign up for our email list. This is the best way to stay updated on new taboo topics, episodes of our podcast, and even find live events near you. On our website, you'll also find links to follow our podcast, Taboo Talks, on platforms like Spotify, YouTube, and Apple. For those who want to dive even deeper, you can join our private WhatsApp community to engage in meaningful discussions about taboo topics with members from all over the world. So don't miss a moment. Visit cissociety.world and share these conversations to support the expansion of our mission. Together, we can spark the change the world needs. Until next time, stay curious, stay open, and remember, the only thing taboo is not talking about it.